You are now listening to the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Daniel Lee, or Photos by DOEE. So in today's episode, we're going to be talking about my 10 years of doing photography. So this month, it officially reached 10 years, so it'll be nice just to look back at some memories, some lessons I've learned over the years, and just sort of share that with people and see, you know, maybe someone can get some benefit lessons from this that's early in their journey, so that way they can have more fun or not waste money like I did back in the day. So who knows? Hopefully it does benefit someone, but we'll see. Now, as always, we're going to start off with some personal updates. So to start off, if you follow my blog, photosbydoee.com, I had like a big oversight. So here in Sydney, I've mentioned that, you know, I haven't been taking photos. Winter's over now. And because of lockdowns, you know, I didn't get to do all the cityscapes I wanted to. Every time we're out, I see people just chilling on the grass, you know, out walking, which is normal. Exercise is allowed. And then the main one was the chilling on the grass was, I found a bit strange, you know. And I also see people out taking photos sometimes, but I thought that wasn't allowed. So one day, you know, the sky was previous week. The sky was really nice. It looked like a great sunset to go out and shoot. And I was like, have to really get back into this. So what I decided to do is look at the actual rules again of why you can leave the house during our lockdown. One of those rules is outdoor recreation, which, you know, seems a bit vague, but when you look it up, it says anything from just sitting out, relaxing outdoors, that sort of stuff. So if you're allowed to just sit there and relax outdoors, you can go out to take photos. So wow, I can actually go out to take photos. Then laziness hit me. I didn't know if I'd actually end up going out, but luckily I pushed myself to go out. Because in these situations, I'm always so lazy, but I know if I go, I can usually get something decent and something worth, you know, a keeper of an image. It's just always pushing yourself to actually go out. And I'm glad I did, because I got an amazing photo of the Sydney Opera House, which I didn't even intend to take photos of. Also just taking photos of the Sydney skyline with the Sydney Eye Tower, I believe it's called. Aside from that, yeah, that was a massive oversight on my part. Didn't have to miss all that shooting that I did. At the same time, the final spot I wanted to do is outside my 5 kilometer radius, so I can't take that one. So, you know, whether I can still go there in October once the lockdown ends is another thing. I don't think so, but yeah, we'll see how we go anyway, because the sunsets might be a bit too late for my liking by then, but all comes down to the weather, I guess. In other news, you know, I've sort of avoided it when it comes to non-fungible tokens, NFTs, and photography. You know, I've even told my friend Joey before that I don't really interest in them, not doing them, but I think I have to backtrack that, and I think I might try to start selling NFTs. When I say that, the main motivating factor, obviously, money. Why would anyone want to sell it if it wasn't for money? That's my main motivator, because I could use that money for lenses, for computer parts, especially the computer parts. My GPU is too old now. If you're familiar with computer parts, I have a GTX 1070. Although it's not old and it's not a bad GPU, for some games like Red Dead Redemption 2, it just doesn't cut it anymore. Like, if I want to play it near ultra, I'm only at like 30 FPS, especially if there's any water around, where if I can get the 3070 Ti, which is actually, funny enough, cheaper than the 3070, I can boost it up to like 60, 70 FPS at most places, which with my monitor, because I have a G-Sync monitor, would look amazing. But back to the whole NFT thing, you know, even when I used to do sales as a job, I hate hounding people about buying stuff. So whether I be successful in it or not is another thing. I think I plan to just post it and forget about it. That's it. You know, it'll sort of be there. I'm not going to be posting on Twitter every single day saying, hey, don't forget I'm selling my NFTs. Check them out. Buy this, blah, blah, blah. It'll be one post. Hey, I've listed this NFT. Check it out if you want. Done. That's it. We'll not post it again. But yeah, main motivator, obviously, be nice to have some money come in for my photography without actually having to do any kind of client work, weddings, portraits, that kind of stuff. So see how we go with it. You know, I'm already owning some crypto on that anyway for investment purposes. So doing this might just, you know, further that. Now, this one isn't official yet, so I can't do it as official news. But on the 14th of September, well, technically by the time this podcast releases, it'll be official. But I can't record it that late, you know, because it takes me time to edit and get everything ready. But generally, by the time of release of this, the Canon R3, the Canon RF 16mm f2.8, and also the Canon RF 100 to 400, I think it's f5.6 to f8, will have been released. Now, as you know, that 16mm f2.8 is the lens, you know, my dream lens, the one I always go on about. That one has, you know, images that have leaked, and it's pretty much the same size as the IRF 15mm f1.8, which is amazing. I honestly think this lens is going to be hugely popular, especially as like a travel lens if you want to do cityscapes, any kind of landscapes, that kind of stuff, and don't want to carry a big, heavy 16-35. Although the weight hasn't been revealed, considering how tiny it is, I think it, you know, will be very light. Nakashita on Twitter has posted quite a few specs about it. So as I mentioned, $299, which is super cheap. It has 9 elements and 7 groups with one aspherical lens. Its minimum shooting distance is 13 centimeters, which is crazy, as well as a maximum shooting magnification of 0.26 times. And a field of diameter of 43 millimeters. So yeah, it is a very, very small lens. I expect it to probably weigh pretty much the same as the 51.8, if not maybe a little bit more, a little bit less, who knows. This lens, honestly, if the image quality is good, be instant buy for me. I will not even second guess pre-ordering. Although, you know, obviously $299, it should be at the absolute most 500 AUD. But who knows what the stores here, you know? They love to mark stuff up, so I wouldn't be surprised if it's a lot more expensive. The R3 is actually, you know, we don't know much, all the specs about it yet, but that one will be quite an interesting announcement. In terms of US pricing, all that has been released as well. So apparently with US pricing, the R3 is going to be $5,999. That's 16mm, as I mentioned, $299. And the RF 100 to 400 is $649. Now, with that RF 100 to 400, I would actually consider selling my Tamron for that if the image quality is good. Because originally when I bought it, I thought, yeah, I might only be shooting, you know, birds a bit, landscapes a bit, but I've only been using it for cityscapes. And honestly, I don't think I can see myself using it for anything else. I think a lot of time to shoot birds, you need to go further out, you know, into the bush, whatever, coastal areas, which I never do. I'm just like a city person. You know, the closest I'll go is to a local park, and the most I'll have there is like some magpies or, you know, cockatoo or something like that. So no point in me worrying purely or getting a lens purely for wildlife when it won't be used for that. It's mainly used for landscapes. Now with that 100 to 400, f8 on the long end is pretty slow and the same as f5.6. So in terms of aperture, mine I believe now is a f4.5 to 6.3. Which is a lot better in that sense, or not a lot, but it is better. But in saying that, if you're only going to use it for landscapes, I'm stopping it down anyway to at least f8 on both ends. So that does not matter. So if wide open performance is really good, but this lens is much lighter, you know, then maybe it'll be worth swapping if the image quality is better as well. Also, it kind of depends on the weight of the lens. Is that's a big factor for me because I actually like tripod collars. I feel they help, you know, create a better center of balance. So if this new lens coming out, it does look very compact and it's not internal focusing either. It's external focusing and zooming. Probably wondering how I know that, but it's because of the leaked photos. You can see it fully extended and what the length is like. But my main point is it has to be better than my Tamron, like, you know, weight wise, image quality wise, AF wise, everything for me to want to swap. Because right now the Tamron is really good. It's really sharp. So in terms of telephotos, I don't know what more I could really want. If it did, the new Canon lens did support tripod collars, then maybe I would consider it, but I feel like I love having a tripod collar, so that may be something I'll just keep the Tamron until it no longer works, and then we'll see what happens from there. Aside from that, nothing really new for me, just work every day, a lot of exercise. I had my COVID shot just last weekend, my first dose of Pfizer. Had a sore arm for a bit, but that's it. Thankfully, no major other symptoms. Had a bit of a dizziness, like headache the next few days, but that was it. So I couldn't work out for a few days, which is a bit annoying because, you know, these days I like to be active, like to do a lot. So I felt like I was going stir crazy just sitting around. Otherwise, it'd be a few more weeks till I can get my second dose. The second dose is the hardest to get, mainly because of availability. Originally, we were meant to get it after like 8 weeks, but we managed to luckily find another booking, which makes it 4 weeks after, which is within that range you're meant to be getting the second dose of Pfizer. So yeah, otherwise for that, that's it pretty much for my personal updates, and we'll go on to the news. Now, the first news update is, once again, Sigma has released more lenses. So they've released their 90mm f2.8 and the 24mm f2 primes for their E and L mount. So these two primes, they've been designed to balance performance and compactness, just like their previous lenses. They're more slower, but, you know, they're 35, 65, that sort of stuff. When it comes to the two individual lenses, so the 90mm, it weighs 295 grams with all metal construction. It has 11 elements in 10 groups with 5 SOD glass elements to reduce axial chromatic aberration, which is to help achieve high resolution and clear images with no color bleeding. It features a 9-bladed aperture Like other DN lenses, it utilizes in-body corrections rather than, you know, doing it in lens. So if you remember lenses like the 85 DG Art, their HSM, that one was absolutely massive because it does everything pretty much purely in lens. Whereas if you looked at the 85 DN Art, the mirrorless version, it was a much smaller because it relies on in-body corrections, which they say is more a benefit of mirrorless, which is true. It has a minimum focus distance of 50 centimeters, which is pretty good for a 90 millimeter lens. If you look at like an 85, they're usually around like 80 centimeters, 90 centimeters minimum focusing distance. So for a non-macro lens, that is pretty close. The disappointing part, I think, for most would be it has a stepping motor. They would be happy about it does have an aperture ring like most of these other series of lenses. In terms of the 24 millimeter one, that one weighs only 365 grams. That one is 13 elements in 11 groups, which includes two SLD glass elements and one FOD glass element to correct axial chromatic aberration. Also has a 9-bladed aperture, a minimum focus distance of 24.5 centimeters. It has a stepping motor, unfortunately, with an all-metal construction. And both lenses are priced at $639 USD and available in late September. You know, if you remove all third-party options from Sony, their lineup is, you know, still pretty good. Maybe not as cheap as, you know, if you're adding third-party, but say for Leica, the L-mount, that and Panasonic especially, they're really getting a lot of help from Sigma. Sigma has so many great lens options for a price. Like these ones, they're not the fastest aperture, but depending on what you shoot, they were great options, honestly. If one day they do manage to bring these lenses to the RF mount and the Z mount, there's going to be so many options out there for photographers because of these, I think. Well, my guess anyway, it's just a matter of getting that AF to work perfectly on, not even perfectly, at least acceptably and closer to it. Where how they do that is another thing, so it'll be interesting to see, but oh well. I guess we'll find out when that day actually happens and we get a release for them. Next up is the Laowa Argus 35mm f0.95, which is being deemed as the world's fastest full-frame lens, which of course, when they say that, they mean for full-frame mirrorless bodies like your Sony, Nikon, because this lens will be available in Sony E-mount, Nikon Z-mount, and Canon RF mount. Sadly, no L-mount there. Its lens will have 14 elements in 9 groups, including a single aspherical lens, an ED glass element, and 4 high refractive index glass elements. A 15 aperture blade, which is insane. You know, 11 is considered a lot. 15 is over the top, but, you know, the images do look great. It has an aperture D-click, so if, you know, you're doing video, you wanna don't have to hear that click and a smooth transition between apertures, you can easily do it. Minimum focus distance of 50 centimeters and a 72mm filter thread. And it does weigh only 755 grams. It does sound like, you know, 755 is a lot. If you look at the 3514GM, that's about 545-60 around there. But keep in mind, this is an f0.95 lens. It is manual focus as well. So technically it bounces out a bit. Maybe if it was, all the focus would be bigger and heavier. The lens will cost $899 US. And in the Petapixel article that's linked, you can see, you know, photos from this. And it honestly does look really good. I wouldn't say it's like one of those lenses that just go for tack sharp that looks the most sharpest thing you've ever seen. It's more the rendering on it is absolutely beautiful. Like I would actually, you know, I'm not big on manual lenses, but I would consider owning this lens if I could afford it. Well, technically I could afford it, but you know, like I already got my 35-1.8. I wouldn't really be doing action and that kind of stuff with this anyway. So it'd be pretty easy to manual focus it, especially when it comes to having a mirrorless camera with peaking, but it's definitely something I can't wait to see more of and see actual reviews from a lot of people. I feel like this is a kind of lens that Dustin Abbott would review, and his reviews are generally good, and I feel like, you know, he could do it justice, especially in terms of images. But I guess we'll just have to wait and see. I'm sure there'll be a lot of people reviewing it in the not too distant future. Next up, Twitter tests full width tweets to give photos and videos more space. So Twitter is once again making changes to make their app more visually pleasing. They, you know, are now experimenting with tweets being displayed in a wider format to cover the entire screen with no padding. So if you look at your Twitter feed on mobile, especially iOS at the moment, you'll find how it usually works when you're scrolling down your feed, you'll have your logo on the left, and then from there, sort of like the text is indented. Whereas with this new way they're gonna do it is, rather than that text be indented, I believe the logo is above where the body would be, and that text spans the full width of the screen, which is, you know, to me, I like the look of it. From what I could see in the preview, it does look different because, you know, so many years Twitter's been the same way, so it, you know, it's obviously going to be a bit of a shock to the eyes when you see it, but it does look definitely better. Of course, this is very subjective. I've seen some people say they don't like it, but I personally like it. It's only currently being tested on iOS, and there's no indication of how long or if it will come to Android or who are the people being targeted for this test. Sadly, I'm not, because I can still see it's not showing up in mine. You know, recently Twitter has really stepped up their photo game and has been really focusing on their improvements. It makes me wonder if they just did this for the sake of doing it. They noticed a lot of people sharing photos on their platform, or it's because of Instagram's more focus towards video and stuff. They saw that opportunity to really win over photographers. You know, the fact that they keep adding all these really photo-orientated features, as well as the fact they still have a chronological feed and don't just try to feed you what they want you to see based on who pays, you know, to have their stuff highlighted. To me, that's why Flickr is the... Flickr is still number one. I still like Flickr the best, but that's why Twitter is much better option than Instagram. You got your 4K image resolution, so they display them in a much nicer quality. They're not compressed to hell. You know, they don't crop them anymore. If that stupid crop that was racist, like, as you know, the algorithm was proved to be racist or whatever. And also, you know, now they're making them wider as well. It's really good to see. Speaking of Twitter, I forgot to mention this in my personal update. I actually created a Twitter just for this. So as you probably know, in previous episodes, I mentioned, you know, if you want to follow me on Twitter, you're going to have to see a lot of wrestling and all that kind of stuff. And I didn't want to use the TPE Twitter to post my own personal stuff because, you know, one day I'll actually love to have people, if you want to post your articles, your own articles on TPE, use your own photos, whatever. I would love for that. You know, I don't want TPE just to be about me. I would love to have, you know, it be like kind of like a Petapixel where other people can post their images, you know. I'd still sort of have that say over what gets posted. I wouldn't just let anyone post anything because I don't want any brand wars kind of stuff. I was going to use a different word, but I don't want any of that kind of stuff. I want people who actually love photography, who would happily shoot any brand, those kind of more positive energy towards it. You know, it's still fun to talk about gear and spit facts if they are need to be spit, you know what I mean? But it's more a case that I don't want, you know, just like, oh, Canon releases useless camera kind of that, or Sony or Nikon or whatever, Nikon's dying every week post. I don't want that ever on there. Even with the podcast, if I met someone that was wanting to do a podcast as well and would work well, you know, I'd happily make this about two people instead, like I originally wanted it to be. But that's all, who knows what happens with the future. But circling back to that, I didn't want to use TPE too much. And I feel if, you know, people want to follow me on Twitter just for my photography, Mr. Meowpuss isn't the best one. So I created a @photosbydoe Twitter just purely from, well, I actually technically had it for months, probably 6 months or something, but I'd never used it. Finally decided to use it. I'm glad I did. So if you do want to see my photo stuff and purely only photography related talk, only my photos, only my photo photography blog posts, photos at photosbydoe. Don't ask me why. Every week before I record, I just eat so much. And then I have to always stop because I feel sick. Today, I ate a whole packet of shortbread biscuits right before I started the day. Here in, I don't know if they sell them overseas, but in Australia, we got ones called the Byron Bay Cookie Company. I only discovered them not long ago, but they do these white chocolate macadamia shortbread biscuits that are so, so, so good. I always finish the whole pack at once. I always feel sick for hours after, but I never learn. And this is someone that's trying to lose weight and get in shape as well, lose all the fat. But, you know, you have to have your cheat meals on the weekend. To me, always have to have a relax. And I go in for like a 2-hour walk later, so it'll be fine. And then the final story is Zhongyi Optics launches the Metacon Creator 135 f2.5 APO lens. So this lens, it will be designed for Canon EF, Canon RF, Nikon Z mount, and Sony FE mounts, which is pretty crazy. It's doing it for DSLRs as well. The lens has 9 elements in 7 groups, including 2 super extra low dispersion glass and 2 ultra high reflection index glass elements, which are meant to provide what they describe as an ultra sharp experience with no vignetting and no distracting color fringing in the highlights. The lens weighs 845 grams and has a 67 millimeter filter size with internal manual focusing, an aperture range of 2.5 to f22, and it will cost only $299. Image wise, it looked quite nice. You know, maybe this is something I could look at buying myself if I wanted a 135 prime. I always did, you know, you can't really compare it in a way, because if you look at something like the Sigma Art, that lens would, you know, I'd say undoubtedly be the nicer, sharper, better lens. But that one, you can get the cheapest around $1,100 on sale, whereas this one's $299. You know, AUD probably like $400-$500. So about $600 more for the Sigma. Is it worth that $600 more? That depends on you and how much you're going to use it. Saying it that way, I feel like I'm already justifying it myself, that I could easily go out and buy that lens now. But no, Have to be strong. This, my computer comes first at the moment. My lens, after the 6mm, 16mm I buy, my lens kit is complete. Before we get to the main topic, I'll just mention that. So once I get this 16mm, I'll have the 16mm f2.8, 35-1.8, 50-1.8, 85-f2, and the 100-400. So I pretty much have everything covered that I would shoot. If I could add other gear, I think I'd probably want a 135 prime, just for how bokehlicious it is. I also wouldn't mind adding a drone. I do one day definitely want to add a drone. Probably the Mavic Air, I'd say, would be my most likely option. I think the most recent one I wanted was the Mavic Air 2S. I think it was 2S. One day I will get that, but I really want to upgrade my PC because my PC, as I mentioned, my GPU is old. It's coming up on 5 years old on my PC, so I kind of want to replace the CPU, motherboard, my AIO, my liquid cooler sort of stuff. Pretty much want to rip it out and replace everything. But also, at my age, you know, just to get off topic a little bit, I'm not young anymore, so I need to start thinking about investments in that. So I need to invest more money in stuff. You know, I want to maybe try index funds, which I've been reading up on. So a lot of stuff I need to think about, you know, at my age as well. Got to look at getting another house, getting family, starting a family, that kind of stuff. Nothing fun about getting old, trust me. No matter people try and tell you it's better getting old, it's nothing better about getting old. Maybe when you get to a certain age, I'd say like between 21 to 25 is the best age. Once you hit 25, all bad from there, trust me. Yep, now onto our main topic. So as I mentioned, this month it reached 10 years since I first started photography. Luckily, it's pretty easy to remember when I started because I consider it to be when I got my first proper camera, which was my Canon 550D, you know, KISS X4. It's also easy to remember because when I met my girlfriend, which was in end of June. So we're also 10 years, so that's an easy way to remember it. And we went to this thing in Perth called the Royal Show, and that's always held in September. And I got my camera just before the Royal Show. So that's why I can always remember September is the month that I first started my photography journey. You know, that decade has gone by really quick. So if you'd ask me, if I didn't even know, and you told me it's been 10 years, I probably wouldn't even realize. A lot's changed for me in that 10 years personally. And you know, my photography as well has changed a lot in that time. I thought it'd be fun just to, you know, reflect on everything, my photography journey, go over some lessons I learned as well, which I feel like is the most important part of it. And yeah. So originally, I believe I've told this story when I did my first sort of intro episode, but in high school, I did photography, wasn't really interested in it. Well, I was interested in it, but I hated the teacher. Yeah, I wouldn't say anything else, but yeah, I hated him. So I, you know, didn't really pursue it after, especially because I didn't have the money for a camera back then. Money was very, very tight. Skip forward, you know, several years to 10 years ago, pretty much. Maybe 10 and a half to 11 years ago. I was between jobs and I had nothing to do. And anytime I had traveled between that, when it was Sydney and Bali, I took a lot of photos on my point and shoot. Like I took heaps because I still had fun taking photos back then of anything. So I was bored and I downloaded Photoscape, if you've heard of it, a free editor. I just started editing all my photos and I had so much fun editing the photos that it made me want to take more. So that's why I ended up going after point and shoot, trying to take more photos. And I liked them, but I couldn't get what I wanted. So then I started researching photography and found out about, you know, if you want to be able to control where the focus is and do stuff like bokeh, you need to be able to control the manual controls of a camera. So because of this, I was like, okay, then that means need to buy a DSLR. Money was still tight. So stupidly, it's where one of the lessons come in. I bought this Nikon point and shoot, which was like a Nikon Coolpix, meant to be one of the hybrid cameras, which is between the DSLR and the normal point and shoot, which honestly, never buy them. Don't buy them. They're not worth the money. So I paid like $300-$400 for that, maybe $350 or something like that. And bought it, kept it for a while, was so unhappy with it. Because, you know, when you're doing handheld shots, you should always do one over your focal length. And this camera was giving me, the IS on it was useless, the image stabilization, and it was giving me shutter speeds of 1/10 of a second, which was like, and this is in like bright daylight as well, when it could just open the aperture up more and give me a faster shutter speed. But because there was no manual controls for it, I hated it. And the funny story was, I could have returned it as well within that first week. I hated it instantly and I wanted to return it, but my girlfriend was like, just keep it, you'll get used to it, you know, don't worry about it. Stupidly, I listened to her, and of course then, you know, that period went and I hated it more and more. I ended up selling it for a loss and I ended up buying the 550D, which was only $550 or something back then, like, you know, $550, $600, somewhere around there. It was very cheap. All I needed to do was put a few hundred more in and I would have saved all that hassle. But anyway, you know, that's when my journey began. You know, like most, when I first got my 550D and my kit lens, even though to that now I'd be like, oh, this lens is pretty bad. Back then it was the most amazing. You know, you show it to your friends, the photos it takes, and everyone's like, wow, it's so clear. You know, that's, remember the one thing everyone would say is how clear the photos were with it. even though the camera was cheap and plastic, you know, to me back then it was so good. It was only once I got my 6D that I realized how cheap and plastic it was in comparison to the 6D. And the 6D wasn't even that solid. It was a solid built camera, but not the most solid, you know, like 1DX levels or even 5D levels. I didn't think I'd need any other lenses, you know, at first, but of course, the more you learn, the more you curious you are, the more gas comes in. So end up spending a lot of money over the years on camera gear. Not as much as you would probably think when you look at how much gear I've been through because of buying and selling. As long as you sell your gear before it's too old, then you can make a decent amount back, especially if nothing's replaced it yet. You know, for example, if I sell my R6 now, I'd make, you know, decent amount back. I wouldn't have too much of a loss. Whereas if I waited, you know, even once the R6 Mark II has come out or even 6 months, a year after that, there's no chance of me getting even near as much as I would get, you know, prior to that release, even if it's just a month or two before the release. But over the years, you know, I've tried with so many different genres, experimented with doing paid work. None of it sort of really interested me, well, in terms of paid work anyway, but I really found that, you know, I love doing it for fun. It's my hobby. It's what relaxes me. It's my art, my expression kind of thing. So that kind of stuff, I would rather focus on that than worrying about making income from that. I'd rather make an income from my day job and then, you know, have photography as my way to wind down, relax if I need to. I would say four major things that I learned over the years that I feel could benefit other people, especially if they're starting their photography journey or, you know, not that far in. These. So the first one is, don't tie yourself to a particular brand. I myself, like many, for a long time stuck to only one brand, which was Canon, you know? I was very against ever using something like Nikon because at that point in shoot, I had a bad taste in my mouth from it. Even Sony, I was like, yeah, they're not as good as Canon, that kind of stuff. But the honest truth is never ever limit yourself to one brand and never have loyalty to that brand either. You can enjoy the products they make, but that doesn't mean that you have to defend them like they're your child or something, you know? If you look at it, you tell me this, if you shoot Canon, you just buy like your normal entry-level bodies for the next 20, 30 years, would you get a discount? No. It's not like if you buy two bodies and a lens, Canon personally are going to give you a free lens or something. It's not going to happen. You know, they do their promos just for anyone. If you buy this camera, you get the RF3518, so the free of charge kind of thing. There is no benefit to brand loyalty, and all you're going to do is just limit your options. You're better off, especially if you have the money, you're better off buying a body from each brand and being able to experience every single lens there is to offer than limiting yourself just to that one brand and having to work with whatever's there. Sure, that having to work may push your creativity with, you know, whatever's available, but you can enjoy the best of both worlds. Like if I could afford it, I would be getting an A7 IV when it comes out with getting my Sigma 85 1.4D and art again, because the 85mm F2 is nice, but you know, F2 can't compare to an F1.4, it just has a different look. That Sigma 85 1.4 art was also probably one of the best lenses I'd ever owned. I may even consider buying it again once they eventually release an RF mount and have two 85s, but we'll see how we go. The next one, the second lesson I sort of learned was get the gear you want the first time. So like I mentioned with that story of my 550D, if I just bought it the first time, I wouldn't have had that hassle. So many times as well, the lenses you buy, you know, you go for the cheaper version rather than just going for the one you want because you think you're saving money, but either that lens won't get the job done very likely as much as you want, or it won't last as long, or you just simply won't be happy with it. You'll wish you bought that and you'll probably end up selling that current lens for a loss and then buying that other one when you could just bought it in the first place. Comes down to buy once, cry once. You know, you spend that money once off, you won't have to spend that money again. Especially with certain items as well. So say something like a tripod. If you buy a good quality tripod, that thing can last you probably a decade if you take care of it. You know, especially with a tripod, they don't really advance to a period where they'd be outdated that quickly. So say like something with body design. If you look at body design, that has changed a lot over the years, whereas lens design hasn't changed as much. Sure, lenses have got more complicated with their more elements and more groups just to fix, you know, errors like chromatic aberration and that kind of stuff, but the actual foundation of them hasn't changed that much. Whereas bodies, they do change a lot more. So if you could choose, you know, between say an R6 and an R5, I know a lot of people say 20 megapixels isn't enough, but how many of you actually print that much? I know everyone goes on about cropping, but you should, in my opinion anyway, really be learning to shoot without cropping as much as possible, get it right in camera. You know, for me, even when I look at 20 megapixels, I'm like, oh, it's a bit low, you know? I would love 30 megapixels, but why? The actual pixel sharpness on the R6 is amazing. You can't tell that, you know, if I was to crop the images to the same resolution, say like 2560 or 2048 on the long end, Remove all EXIF data. Would you be able to tell between the R5 and the R6 photo if I processed them, I edited them myself the exact same way? Likely not. And what do I do with most of my photos? I post them on my blog at 25 by 60 pixels wide, or post them on Flickr pretty much the same as well. So what's the point of having 50, 60 megapixels if I'm just going to be posting online at like 2 or 3 megapixels? There's no point. The R6 does an amazing job for what it was. And there are benefits, you know, like better performance in low light as well. Obviously, smaller file size for when you're editing. But, you know, you always got to do it within reason. So as I mentioned, with the R6 to R5, you may not get much of a benefit. And going for the cheaper option, you know, you may be happy with that. That's something, so that's up to you. If you really want the R5, just go for it. Just keep it longer to make it pay off. Or as I said, still probably sell it when the new one comes out so you can get the best money. But, you know, you'll find a way to make it work. Just not everyone has the budget to do it. You know, as I mentioned, I was in that stage where even the 550D was too expensive for me. But you just have to really make sure you are happy with your purchase so you don't have to just keep buying and wasting money. The next one is don't let rules hinder your creativity. So you'll find there's these unwritten rules in photography. Follow the rules of third. You have to, you know, expose certain things away. Don't do certain types of composition like a Dutch angle. Don't do selective color, you know, where everything's black and white and you got one red bit. You got all these people who will judge and criticize people online. But when it comes down to it, you really have to do what's creative for you. Like, for example, I love crushing the blacks, having a very high contrast, pretty much no shadow detail, just black and then all your highlights and midtones. This isn't very popular in photography and I don't do it as much as I used to. That style, my style did evolve and change, but I remember back when I did do that style, people would harass me, you know, in comments. I remember one of my petapixel artists, people complaining about the way I edited my photos, but that was my style. That was what I wanted to achieve for the image. And you should not let people discourage you either. That should be something that you should do regardless of what they think. There's obviously some sort of things that are correct in a way, my opinion, you know, let's just say like Dutch angle. I'm not really a fan of that depending on what it is, but especially for a landscape, a Dutch angle landscape. If you don't know what Dutch angle is, it's pretty much rather than your horizon be straight, it's on like a 45 degree angle sort of thing. Horizons should be straight, just number one thing. Please keep them straight, but you know, that's the one exception to this whole thing. But just try and do what's best creatively for you, whether it's editing and that kind of stuff. Keep in mind that, you know, there's always chance to learn, especially when it comes to editing as well, which maybe I'll save that because then step number four, or finger number four is push yourself to learn new things. As I mentioned just then, there's always more to learn. So for example, luminosity masks, they're the most powerful thing you could probably do when you come to editing. What they do is they let you select either the midtones, the darks, or the shadows or the highlights. You can just select which one you want to edit individually. So say you have a photo, a landscape, the midtones are perfectly exposed, the shadows, the dark areas are perfectly exposed, but then the highlights are blown out and it's really hard to adjust those highlights without affecting the other two, even though they're perfect and you don't want to touch them. If you do a luminosity mask, it can select it based on that tonal range. So you can select just those highlights. And when you select just those highlights, you can adjust them. So you end up not affecting the whole image, but only those selected areas. So obviously in this case, that's where, you know, learning new techniques. And I didn't even know about that. Well, I'd heard about it and always known about it, but I didn't understand how they worked. And there's some tutorials and that kind of stuff. Everything's very complicated on how to use them. Like before, you know, you'd have to create all these actions just to do it. Now you got Photoshop plugins like Lumenzia. Otherwise, you can do it through both Lightroom and Adobe Camera Raw with the adjustment brush or graduated filter. There's many different ways you can actually do it now. And it's so much more easier to do. So, you know, even though I've been shooting 10 years now, I learned that after, say, 9.5 years or 9 years. So it shows that there's always more to learn and there's always ways to push yourself, to push your creativity, you know, the way you edit, the way you shoot, everything. For example, say you want to take a photo of a PlayStation controller. Some people might just take that one photo and that's it, but you could challenge yourself to take multiple photos. You have to take that same product and shoot it three different ways. The way to look at it is, you know, if you usually take portraits of a model, you wouldn't just take one portrait and that's it. Often people will take three or four different poses, maybe even more. You could look at everything that way, whether you're doing a photo of a building, like say, for example, Sydney Opera House, you could do three different photos, three different styles of exposure, like one of just purely the whole building, one focusing just on one aspect, like the sails of it, that sort of stuff. There's so many different options you could do. And that's why it's important to always push yourself and always learn. Because once you stop learning, it honestly can get quite boring. I think anything like that, even if you look at a normal job, whether your job is photography or not, if you're just doing the same thing day in and day out, it can get very boring if you're not learning. It's good. Like when I swap jobs, although I miss my old job, miss my old company, I do love learning new things, you know? I feel more challenged again, which I like. I hate being bored at work. I like to be able to really challenge myself. So yeah, that's my sort of look back at 10 years of photography. Maybe not as in depth. Like I don't want to go over every single year I shot because that'll probably, I think the show is going to be at least 30 minutes or 35, 40 minutes long already. And I know most people prefer shorter episodes, I think so. If you do prefer longer episodes, please let me know because, you know, I can make it a little bit longer, I guess, but I'm not the type to really waffle on too much. I always tell my girlfriend she waffles on and she gets very angry when I say that she waffles on or rambles. Maybe I'll tell her that again when she gets home. I'll be like, how was your rambling? But otherwise, you know, I don't see myself quitting photography anytime soon. Well, I don't think I would, to be honest. I think it's something I'll always do. If I had to choose between my photography and my games, then that's where it'll be get harder. I might have to give up photography because I love video games, you know. Both my two loves, well, technically I was playing video games before I was taking photos. So, but otherwise, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you very much for listening. If you want to listen to previous episodes, see articles, reviews, that kind of stuff, you can go to thephotographyenthusiast.com. Otherwise, if you want to follow me personally, at photosbydlwe on Twitter. Also, photosbydlwe.com. All of this will be in the show notes. Easy to find. Otherwise, thank you very much for listening. Make sure to subscribe. Reach out if you want to suggest a topic as well. There is a thing on the show notes where you can submit it. Not sure if it works on iTunes, but Spotify, I'm pretty sure it does, as well as on the website. So thank you very much for listening. See ya.